Yates Cup begins on Saturday, October 25th at home against the McMaster Marauders, and the stakes have never been higher. In the playoffs, the margin for error is razor thin. One play can make all the difference between elation,
a touchdown for the Gales,
and devastation. CFRC's coverage begins at 12:45 with the Rad Club pregame show ahead of the scheduled 1 p.m. kickoff. It's all or nothing, and you can't afford to miss it.
Beats has put it away!
Welcome back to Melodies of Myth, where we explore short historical tales blended with Indian classical and Western music. I'm your host, Simar Kaur, and it's an honor to accompany you on this journey of discovering the rich interweaving of music and history. Together, we will explore the stories, traditions, and timeless melodies that have shaped our understanding of this art form. Today's story is called The Night Rock That Waited for the Rain. It follows a young musician learning that Indian classical music isn't just about precision or performance, it's about patience, timing, and listening. Through her connection with Rag Malhar, the Rag of the Rain, she discovers that sometimes art doesn't move the world, it simply moves in rhythm with it. This story isn't about the miracle of sound, but the quiet honesty of waiting for the right moment to play. Here is The Night Rag That Waited for the Rain. When Anaya first learned to play the sitar, she loved how every string carried a horizon inside it. Her teacher told her, "Music isn't a sound, it's a lesson." The rag she feared the most and loved the most was Malhar. Legend said it could summon rain and the sky would listen if you played it sincerely. And as a child, she imagined gods in the clouds bending to hear her notes. But when she grew older, she realized it wasn't about magic. It was about timing, about finding your note in the weather of the world. Now, years later, she sat in a rehearsal room, far from her hometown, preparing for a concert called Monsoon Night. The posters promised a journey through Indian classical music. She smiled at the title. The Arts Council loved drama, but the name stuck with her. Monsoon Night. The trouble was, there was no monsoon. The air outside was dry, the trees stood still, and for a concert that celebrated rain, it felt dishonest. So, Anaya made herself a rule. She wouldn't play Malhar unless it actually rained. That week, she practiced everything else. Yaman for sunrise, Bhimplasi for afternoon warmth, Desh for memory, but each time she reached Malhar, something inside her tightened, as if the air itself wasn't ready. One afternoon she called her grandfather, her dad, the one who taught her her first note. "Malhar," he said, "isn't about making rain fall. It's about learning when not to force it. You must place your notes where water would collect." "Where water would collect," she repeated. "What does that mean?" He laughed softly. "When it rains, the earth already knows where to hold it. You don't have to decide that. Just play where there's space." She didn't fully understand, but she carried his words like a thread. The evening of the concert arrived. The hall was small. Warm light, rows of folding chairs, the hum of conversations before quiet. She could smell jasmine and rainless air. When the organizer introduced her, she took her seat, crossed her legs, and tuned the strings. The first note hummed through the hall like a promise. She began not with Malhar, but with Bhimplasi, a rag that carries the mood of longing without sadness. Her fingers found each phrase carefully, building sound like soft architecture. The Tanpura drone steadied her breath. The audience grew still. The music filled the corners, and then, during a long, trembling note, she heard it. Faint at first, the sigh of wind against an open window. She thought she was imagining it, but then came a sound she hadn't dared hope for. A drop, and then another. A slow rhythm forming outside. It was rain. No one moved. The sound of water touched her music like an old friend joining in. Anaya felt something shift in her chest. Not pride, not triumph, just a quiet recognition. The time had come. Without announcing it, she slipped into Malhar. The transition was gentle, as if the two rogues had been speaking to each other all along. Her sitar voice grew round and full, the notes curving like water rolling down leaves. Each slide of her finger mirrored the rain's descent. Each pause held a breath of thunder that never came. She remembered Dada's words, "Place your notes where water would collect." So she left space between phrases, letting the silence hold shape. In that space, the music and the rain spoke back and forth, not in competition, but in companionship. The hall became a small world suspended between two rhythms, one made by her hands and the other by the sky. She thought of her first music class, tracing circles on the mat, listening to her teacher say that Malhar was a conversation. She smiled. He had been right all along. Her right hand plucked a soft pattern, repeating it with variations, ripples on a surface that refused to stay still. Her left hand bent a note until it trembled like lightning just beyond sight. The rain grew steadier. The audience leaned in, caught between reverence and disbelief. The sound outside wove perfectly into the thal, as if nature had found its own percussion. When she reached the final note, she didn't rush to end it. She let it fade slowly, patiently, until it disappeared into the sound of the rain itself. The hall stayed silent for a moment longer than usual. No one wanted to break what had been shared. Then applause rose, soft at first, then blooming like the rain outside, finding confidence. After the concert, a young listener approached her. "Did you make it rain?" he asked, half joking and half serious. Anaya smiled. "No, I just waited until the rain was ready to listen." She stepped outside her sitar case. The rain was still falling, not heavy, just steady. The street glistened. She titled her face upward and let it wash over her. In that moment, she understood what her grandfather had meant. Music wasn't about control. It was about alignment, about knowing when to play and when to wait. As she walked home, puddles mirrored the lamplight, each one a small rag of its own, reflecting what was above, holding what had fallen. She thought of her teacher, her grandfather, the first lesson she'd ever learned. Music doesn't make the world respond. It simply teaches you to listen to it better. And that night, beneath the sky humming with rain, Anaya realized Malhar had never been about asking for rain. It had always been about becoming quiet enough to hear when it came. And up next, we have Canadian musician Harry Manx, an artist who beautifully bridges the distance between East and West. His music blends the soul of the blues with the meditative tones of Indian classical tradition, often featuring the Mohan Veena, a hybrid slide guitar rooted in Hindustani music. This next piece, "Don't You Cry," carries that unique sound, heartfelt, reflective, and gently touched by the textures of the rag. It's a sound that carries both grounded and transcendent, like a conversation between continents. Enjoy.
Women in STEM. Are you interested in joining a group that advocates for lifting up women and other underrepresented groups in STEM? Well then, WISE is the place to be. Women in Science and Engineering at Queen's University is a group of passionate women creating welcoming and inclusive spaces for future engineers, scientists, and leaders. When you join WISE, you'll have the opportunity to learn from experienced pros in the field, grow your network, and be a source of inspiration for the young women in the Kingston community. Follow our Instagram at QueensWISE or visit our website www.queenswise.ca to learn more.
And with that, our journey today comes to an end. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll see you next week, Fridays at 3 p.m., only on Melodies of Myth.
Visit the Screening Room, Kingston's only independent movie theater located downtown at 120 Princess Street. They specialize in playing art house, international classic, and cult cinema, along with Hollywood's best new releases. People also always say they have the best popcorn in town. Visit Screening Room at screeningroom.com for upcoming show dates and ticket information.
I love being a lesbian. I'm not going to apologize for that.
On October 13th, 1990, South Africa saw its first pride parade in Johannesburg.
I'm writing a little bit better because I understand myself a little bit more. I've gone through a lot and I understand what I'm trying to say a little bit better. Going back to Carolina.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. Turkey's government proposes new anti-queer persecution. October anniversaries from Shepherd to South Africa and musician Jenny Arno on the comeback trail. Those stories and more this week, now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm Sarah Montague.
And I'm Joe Bainline.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending October 18th, 2025. Turkey is ratcheting up its persecution of LGBTQ people with a series of so-called judicial reforms. The government of President Recep Tayyip Erdogan seems to be mimicking fellow autocracies Vladimir Putin's Russia and Viktor Orban's Hungary, according to Turkey Today. One proposal announced on October 15th declares, any person who engages in, publicly encourages, praises or promotes attitudes or behaviors contrary to their biological sex at birth and public morality shall be punished with imprisonment of 1 to 3 years. Although same-gender sex is technically not against the law in Turkey, queer couples hosting engagement or wedding celebrations would face up to 4 years in prison under the new legislation. The maximum penalty for so-called public sexual acts or exhibitionism would be increased from 1 to 3 years. The legal age for gender affirmation surgery would be raised from 18 to 25 years. A trans person seeking surgery must be unmarried. They must undergo 4 separate evaluations, at least 3 months apart, and a health ministry-approved training and research hospital must declare the procedures psychologically necessary. After the medical report is substantiated, they'll need a court order to amend their entry in the civil registry. Skirting the legal requirements to perform gender affirmation surgery is punishable by up to 7 years behind bars. The government says its rationale is to ensure the upbringing of physically and mentally healthy individuals and to protect the family institution and social structure. President Erdogan has targeted the LGBT community since he first took power in 2003. Pride celebrations that once drew record crowds in major Turkish cities are now illegal, and activists who attempt pride face arrest and assaults by security police. To Erdogan, queer people are perverse and a threat to traditional values and the family unit.
The Church of Norway is formally apologizing to LGBTQ people for years of bias and demonstrable harm. Presiding Bishop Olaf Fiksetveit delivered his expression of repentance on October 16th at Oslo's popular queer venue, the London Pub. That was the scene of a Pride Night shooting rampage in June 2022 that killed 2 people and wounded at least 21 others. As Tveit confessed on behalf of the bishop's conference, the church in Norway has imposed shame, great harm, and pain. This should not have happened, and that's why I apologize today. In the 1950s, the same conference called LGBTQ people a social danger of global dimensions. By 2007, the Church of Norway was welcoming openly gay clergy and blessing the marriages of same-gender couples. Tveit credited conversations with community organizations for his decision to go public. He said, "It is heartening when those who previously felt condemned by the church have welcomed us with open arms. It is a grace."
Wyoming's book ban battling local librarian has been vindicated in a $700,000 settlement against the state. Terry Leslie was fired by the Campbell County Public Library Board in 2023 after 27 years of service. A contentious 2-year debate had raged in the U.S. state's northeastern region over the removal of books on sexuality and queer identities. The board withdrew from the American Library Association and the Wyoming Library Association, both of which opposed censorship. Some of the books Leslie was refusing to remove included How Do You Make a Baby by Anna Fisk, Gender Queer by Maya Kababi, and Dating and Sex, A Guide for the 21st Century Teen Boy by Andrew P. Smiler. The librarian stood firm against the escalating pressures, but was ultimately forced out by a 4-1 vote of the board. Now, with her victory, Leslie told the Associated Press, "It's been a rough road, but I will never regret standing up for the First Amendment." Leslie's attorney, Iris Halpern, said in a press statement, "We hope at least that her victory sends a message to other library districts, other states, other counties, that the First Amendment is alive and strong and that our values against discrimination also remain alive and strong."
Australia has no place for Candace Owens. The High Court unanimously upheld Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke's 2024 visa rejection for the far-right U.S. podcast personality. Burke found that Owens failed the Migrant Act's required character test, pointing to her extremist and inflammatory comments toward Muslim, Black, Jewish, and LGBTQIA+ communities, which generate controversy and hatred. The court agreed, writing, "There is a risk that Owens would stir up or encourage dissension or strife in the Australian community, or a segment of that community of a kind or to a degree that is harmful to that community or segment." Owens's suit claimed that Australia does protect political speech from criminal prosecution, even though it has no formal laws protecting freedom of speech. She's infamous for such political speech as Holocaust denial and conspiracy theories about climate change, gender-affirming health care, and COVID. The court countered, saying the implied freedom of speech is not a personal right, is not unlimited, and is not absolute. The three-judge panel unanimously concluded that the Australian people were not being deprived of Owens' views because they are still easily accessible online. The influencer must also pay the government's legal costs. As Minister Burke wrote in his original visa denial, Australia's national interest is best served when Candace Owens is somewhere else.
As the Trump administration marches the United States into autocracy, former President Barack Obama is increasing his public profile. He's actively campaigning for the passage of Proposition 50 in California. It's a congressional redistricting ballot initiative meant to counter a Trump-ordered move in Texas, where the map was rearranged to favor five more Republican seats in the U.S. House. Prop 50 would create five more Democratic-leaning districts in the Golden State. Obama has been a consistent LGBTQ ally ever since he first voiced support for marriage equality. The 44th U.S. president was a final guest this week on the venerable WTF podcast, where he and retiring host Mark Maron talked about taking a gentler approach with the opponents of gender-affirming health care for young people.
If I talked about trans issues, I wasn't talking down to people and saying, oh, you're a bigot. I'd say, you know what? It's tough enough being a teenager. Let's treat all kids decently. Why would we want to see kids bullied?
Or shamed.
Yeah. Why would we want to do that? Why wouldn't we want to just, you know, what if it was our kid?
Finally.
Morning, everyone. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning,
welcome to Greenhouse 3 Second Years. Now gather round, everyone. Today we're going to repot mandrakes.
If Professor Pomona Sprout is known for her emphatic morning greetings in the Harry Potter movie franchise, 84-year-old British actress and national treasure Miriam Margolyes is known for waking up her fans in other ways. As she explained to Irish TV's The Late Late Show host Patrick Keeley.
You have described yourself as unapologetically woke.
I am. I'm a left-wing dyke. And I love it. I love being a lesbian. I'm not going to apologize for that.
Where does the fun come from?
The fun in being a lesbian?
or generally in life.
And that's News Wrap. Global queer news with attitude for the week ending October 18th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Sarah Montague. Stay healthy.
And I'm Joe Bainline. Stay safe.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis.
I'm Margaret Cho.
I'm John Ritchie.
This is Edmund White.
Hi, I'm Kate Clinton.
Hello, I'm Armistead Maupin.
I'm Clive Barker.
This is Judy Shepherd.
Hello, this is Ian McKellen.
I'm Jerry Jewell.
I'm Stephen Fry.
I'm Harvey Milk.
Hi, this is Janice Ian.
My name's Robbie Rogers.
This is Essex Hemphill.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres.
I'm Tab Hunter.
I'm Billy Bean.
This is John Cameron Mitchell.
Hello, I'm Bruce Valange.
This is Bishop Gene Robinson.
I'm Reverend Troy Perry.
I'm Robbie Kaplan.
I'm Andrew Sullivan.
This is Augustine Burroughs.
I'm Barney Frank.
I'm Cleve Jones.
My name is Kate Kendall.
I'm Dan Savage.
I'm B.D. Wong.
This is Dorothy Alice.
I'm Patricia Nell Warren.
I'm Amanda Burst.
Hi, I'm Daryl Stevens, and you've discovered
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
The showpiece of the homosexual movement.
The international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
How dare they?
And those who love them.
You ain't gonna get this nowhere else.
Oh, my.
And that's the truth.
Please do stay tuned.
Listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine.
And now it's time to set our dials back with the Rainbow Rewind, your look at the moments, milestones, and memories that shape our queer journey.
From hard-won victories to cultural firsts, from the unknown to the iconic legends,
we celebrate the people and events that remind us how far we've come and how far we still shine. I'm Sherry Lunn.
And I'm Brian DeShazer. This week, we honor Matthew Shepard, who was horrifically assaulted October 7th, 1998, and tragically died on October 12th. His death anniversary is profoundly significant in LGBTQ history. His murder sparked national and international outrage and became a rallying point for activism around hate crimes.
The notoriety of his tragic end ultimately contributed toward the passage of the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act. His parents, Judy and Dennis, launched the Matthew Shepard Foundation in his memory.
Now let's rewind some key queer moments.
Bob Mellors and Aubrey Walter hosted what became recognized as the UK's first Gay Liberation Front meeting at the London School of Economics on October 13, 1970. This event is often cited as foundational in the UK's organized gay liberation movement.
Between October 17th and 19th in 1980, nearly 200 Black lesbian women met in San Francisco for the first Black lesbian conference.
On October 13, 1990, South Africa saw its first Pride Parade in Johannesburg. This was a landmark in queer visibility in a country undergoing massive political change toward ending apartheid and demonstrated how LGBTQ rights were part of a broader struggle and liberation.
That's this week's Rainbow Rewind.
Because our stories aren't just in the past, they're the pride that powers our future.
I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lunn. Stay tuned. More This Way Out just ahead.
It's unfortunate, but not unusual, for queer independent musicians to suddenly disappear without a trace. Frequently, their sounds are never to be heard again. That's why it's a big deal to meet one who's launching an exciting comeback after more than a decade of life's ebbs and flows. This Way Out's David Hunt found this special singer-songwriter riding a rising tide somewhere between New York, New York, and Greenville, South Carolina.
Jenny Arnaud's music rises and falls like the ocean tides, carries you over rivers of mud, leaving you soaked to your soul in the pouring rain. Listening, though, and Arnaud will lead you through the storm.
The hardest rain only welcomes the spring. Where flowers burst and cicadas sing.
I'm David Hunt. Jenny Arnaud cut her teeth as a singer-songwriter in New York's East Village in the first decade of the millennium, at a time when the city's music scene played host to an indie rock revival. She released three independent albums featuring her signature sound,
a shot of Southern comfort tinged with an urban edge. Then, just after releasing her third album, Chasing Giants, in 2009, she dropped off the radar.
What am I to do now? Just turn and walk away. Better luck next time is all you can say.
Jenny Arnaud is back on the music scene after a 15-year hiatus with a new album full of new songs and new stories of love, loss, and life. I sat down with Arnaud recently to talk about her new album, A Rising Tide, and to find out where she's been and how she's faring. So is it weird doing media for a new album after a few years away?
Yeah, it's very strange. It's really fun, though, because I'm coming from a completely different place. So it feels very kind of new and a little bit exciting, a little refreshing. And I feel like I can be myself more. I've changed in that way. I've grown up a bit. You know, I'm a little more grounded. So it feels kind of nice.
Early in your career, before this break that we're going to talk about, did you feel like you were chasing something, chasing fame or chasing success?
Yeah, a little bit. Actually, a lot. And I also felt like, and this is the interesting thing of before the break to after the break, because before the break, I was chasing and I was losing. And I felt like a failure. Even though it was everything that I loved to do, it became almost a burden. Because I had put the wrong, I feel like I had put the wrong weight on it. It should be always you do it because you love it. And if you happen to be successful, that's fantastic. But most of us don't find monetary success in music. So we have to find what makes us happy. And I just couldn't do, I was too either self-centered or too immature. Or whatever it was. But I felt like I was watching some of my friends get a lot more success. And it just made me feel like a failure.
We alluded to the break you took from music, but we haven't explained it. Life is what happens when you're busy making other plans, right? And life hit you pretty hard.
I don't think I've ever kind of talked about this, but it started off 2005 and 2006. I had a lot of friends pass away. I had a couple pass away from AIDS, and I had a couple pass away from cancer. And it was kind of a, not just a double whammy. It was like a quadruple, you know, whatever whammy. It was just a lot. And around that time, my mother had a fall, and it wasn't even a big deal. Dad took her to the doctor, and they said she had early dementia. And so her curvature down was pretty slow at first, and everything was okay. But around 2008 or 2009, I think she died in 2014, it started to become really kind of problematic. I was very tight with my mother, and it really emptied my tank. I didn't want to really work. I didn't want to play. I didn't want to write. But, you know, slowly but surely you start to kind of put something down like, God, I gotta just put that out and then kind of walk away. And that's how it started to kind of gear back up. But it took a long time. And I have to say, grief is weird because you don't know how you're going to maneuver through it, you know? And I'll be the first to admit, I didn't maneuver well. I didn't maneuver well through it.
You thought you could hold on one more day. You thought you could hold on one more day. You thought you were strong enough to keep love safe, but the sun's gonna set and the wind's gonna change.
then the child will cry, and your heart will break.
Oh. You were with your now wife, then girlfriend, when your mom's dementia diagnosis was made. And I imagine that could have gone any number of ways. How did it go?
My wife is exceptional. And I know everyone says that about their partners. I get it. But she is, she has the abilities to navigate situations that I personally can't navigate. And she brings a lot of clarity to me because I'm a kind of emotional wreck all the time. I'm like, all the time. And so she's always like, that's okay. We'll take this step by step, and we'll take this step by step, and this step by step. And ever since we got together, she's been that way.
So there's a song on your new album that I think is a wedding song, but I'm not sure. Heaven in Her Eyes. Does that have anything to do with your relationship?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Heaven in Her Eyes was written for her. We got engaged right after, about 6 months after mom passed. Mom knew Tamara. She loved Tamara. But that's when we got engaged. And I just thought, I wish that mom had known that this was going to be my partner for the rest of my life. That's what I wish. Because my mother was everything, was my world when I was a kid, and Tamara has taken that place, not as my mom, but as my partner and someone that I trust implicitly, always. And it's lovely.
With a kiss, they were on their way. Stormy weather, a beautiful day. Every drop of rain is a year with no struggle.
Let's talk about digging your way out of that dark place that you were in and the part that music writing and performing played in that.
Well, writing definitely played a lot because when I started to come up for air, I didn't know exactly what air I was coming up to and what I was going to do and how I was going to sound and what it was going to be. And I started writing. Heaven in Her Eyes was one of the first ones that I wrote, and I liked it. And Back to Carolina, I kind of wrote because I was split and I didn't know what I was quite doing. I knew I didn't want to live in Carolina, but I also knew I should be there. You know, my family, my father and my brother took on a lot with my mom, a lot. And though I was going in and out, I didn't feel like I took on as much. And I didn't, to be fair. So Back to Carolina, I wrote because of that. And then I wrote Heaven in Her Eyes. And I kind of liked them both. I was like, I like these songs. I think they sound good. But I just kind of played them for myself and whatever. And I wrote a couple more. And then I sent them off to my two music buddies just to say, hey, I'm writing again. What do you guys think? And my friend Pete, who plays the keyboards on this record, he's like, you got to record. Like, these are great. You got to do it. And then Alan, who's my drummer, he was like, yep, let's get in. And every time I wrote another song, it just felt a little lighter. It felt better and better. And like, I was like, wow, I think I can even write. I'm writing a little bit better because I understand myself a little bit more. I've gone through a lot and I understand what I'm trying to say a little bit better.
Jenny Arnaud's new album, A Rising Tide, will be released November 7th. Find her music on your favorite streaming platform or visit jennyarnaumusic.com. JenneyArnaumusic.com. I'd like to thank Jenny Arnaud for sharing her story and her music for this program. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. NewsWrap was reported this week by Sarah Montague and Joe Bainline and produced by Brian DeShazer. The Rainbow Rewind was written and produced by Sherry Lynn and Brian DeShazer, and David Hunt produced this week's words and music feature. The Doobie Brothers and Jenny Arnaud performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks John Dyer V of Winston, Oregon, Richard Burke and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, celebrating 50 years together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappell, and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And on CFUV, Victoria, British Columbia, KRFP, Moscow, Idaho, WOZO, Knoxville, Tennessee, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay safe, stay healthy, and stay tuned.
CFRC 101.9 FM every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 p.m. You'll hear Finding a Voice. My name is Bruce, host of that poetry-focused spoken word program. On it, you'll hear local readings and events, occasionally telephoned interviews across Canada, and always a touch of music. Again, Finding a Voice, here every Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Check it out. Hope to catch you there. You're listening.